You don't need rockets or planes. You don't need buses or trains to tour the world.
Good evening to all of you. I welcome you to Saturday Night at Monitor. I am Bill Mazur. Here we are smack in the middle of the silly season. Everybody has at least a touch of midsummer madness, but would you believe a beauty contest in which all the contestants are nude? It happened just today in Naked City, Indiana. That's right, Naked City, Indiana. The winner of the Miss Nude America title will be talking with me in just a little while. Now, our ace sportsman, Guy LeBeau, may come up with a lot of exclusives, but I don't think he can top that. Guy will be along with the results of other contests in about 3 minutes. Meantime, let's hear the Grassroots and run away.
If you're riding down the road right now in an old car you're not too happy with, then you'll be glad you were listening to this station. You can buy a new Buick right now for a lot less than you might think. Manufacturers' suggested retail prices on new Buicks are actually lower this summer than they were last year because of the federal excise tax repeal. That means your Buick dealer will be dealing from a lower base price. And that should tell you something about the summertime deal you can expect on any of the new Buicks, including the elegant Electra 225, the handsome Centurion, the luxurious LeSabre, and all the sporty Skylarks. 27 Buicks in all. And think about this. Your old car will never be worth more than it is right now. See your Buick dealer. He's got a big stock of new Buicks to pick from, so you can expect quick delivery. Enjoy your summer. Not in that old car you're driving now, but in a brand new Buick. It'll never be easier.
It's time to catch up on sports.
Catch up and then some with a fellow who covers all the bases and is a steal at any price, Mr. Guy LeBeau.
Thank you, Bill. Hello, everybody. Round three of the Westchester Golf Classic is over. For a direct report, let's switch to sports director Len Dillon at Westchester.
Guy. Guy Jack Nicholas finally caught the 27-year-old ex-fireman and Air Corps veteran Dwight Neville today at the 6th Annual Westchester Golf Classic here at the Westchester Country Club in Harrison, New York. Jack Nicklaus fired a 72 under par today to go 14 under for 54 holes, while Neville had a 73 one over, which left him 12 under for 54 holes. In third place was Gabe Brewer with a 68 today, 10 under, followed by Charlie Sifford and Jim Colbert, both who had 70s and are 8 under. Dwight Weaver, 72 today, 7 under, and Bruce Devlin and Wayne Yates, 6 under. Yates had a 74, Devlin a 75. And Jim Simons, the college lad, had a 79 today and slipped to 2-under. But tomorrow is the big day, the pressure day. We're all anxious to see how Neville will do against Big Jack. At the Westchester Country Club, Len Dillon for Monitor Sports, and back to you, Guy.
Fine, Len, but you got to put your money on Nicklaus. He's won this three separate times. We'll check you tomorrow at the finish. This is the baseball picture. The Cleveland Indians remain the hottest team in baseball right now today. They ripped the Tigers again 6-1 at Detroit, an inside-the-park home run by Tom McCraw and young Dick Tidrow, the winning pitcher. And you know, suddenly after the emergence at Cleveland of young Steve Dunning and Tidrow, pitching coach Warren Spahn is being given due credit for the excellent pitching there. Spahn told me earlier today he's taught the kids to make the batters hit them on the ground. It's simple. Well, that simple, it's really not. Anyway, the Indians have won their last 14 out of 20. They nearly have single-handedly dumped the Tigers out of first place and kept them there. The Tigers now trail first place Baltimore by a game. Baltimore will play the Boston Red Sox twice tonight. The Yankees are the other super-hot team right now. When you're hot, every move turns out right, like today. Manager Ralph Houk, on a last-moment decision, inserted the veteran outfielder Johnny Callison, who hasn't done much in weeks. Today, 3-for-3, a grand slam home run, 6 RBIs, and the Yankees trail Baltimore by two, and Detroit by one. In the National League, the Pirates 6-5 over the Cardinals. The Mets stayed right with them and won their ballgame 2-1 over Chicago. Tommy Agee and Willie Mays homered. Tom Seaver, his 13th victory. The Expos took the Phillies 3-2. Possibly the best exhibition football game tonight gets underway in minutes. The Jets and the Steelers, and if the Steelers win, experts have said it was going to be an upset. And I just told the Steeler quarterback Terry Bradshaw that. Here's what he said.
I don't think it's, of course, people have their own point of views. I don't know how they rate a game or, come up with the scores. I think that we can beat any team. We beat the Jets last year. Of course, Namath didn't play, but Bob Davis, I think, threw 3 touchdown passes. I think that we can beat them with or without him, and that goes for not only our team, but any other team we play. We are a positive-thinking team, and we have no doubts in them whatsoever that we can beat the Jets tonight.
That game started moments ago. It's a test, of course, for Joe Namath, but a much bigger test for the Steelers, who this year are supposed to have no weaknesses and their division championship locked up. Finally, this afternoon, the National Hockey League president Clarence Campbell announced that he couldn't care less about the $48 million lawsuit that's been leveled against him and his league by Gary Davidson on the new World Hockey Association. And I think I know why he doesn't care. It's just that the NHL doesn't have that kind of money to lose or anything like it, so what if the WHA wins? You see, since the WHA came into being, the National Hockey League has had to throw money around like seltzer water just to keep its players in its league. And I'll give you one example that I just found out about. The New York Raiders of the World Hockey Association persuaded a forward named Bill Flett. Who? Bill Flett. They persuaded Bill to leave the Philadelphia Flyers and jump to that league. He was getting about $35,000 per at Philadelphia. The Raiders gave him a 3-year contract for about $65,000. He signed it, but then he jumped right back to Philadelphia, where that team gave him $250,000, and the NHL threw in a $100,000 bonus. That's only one example of what it's costing the National Hockey League to stay in the war. So, if the World Hockey Association wins that suit, they'll have to collect it in hockey pucks. This is Guy LeBeau at the Monitor Sports Desk. Bill, need any hockey pucks?
I was just going to say, I got a pair of skates, though. We'll travel. Thank you very much, Guy. As I mentioned before, we'll hear about the results of another sporting event, the Mr. and Miss Nude America contest. You'd have to be some sport to enter, I'd say. And that's coming up in about 5 minutes, so get ready to get out of the rough and into the buff on the good old summertime Monitor Beacon. Thank you. This is Bill Mazur for Monitor, and music for you by Mama. Mama Cass, that is.
Nobody can tell you there's only one song worth singing. They may try and sell you, 'cause it hangs them up to see someone like you. But you've gotta make your own kind of music, sing your own special song. Make your own kind of music, even if nobody else sings along. You're gonna be just to do your thing, the hardest thing to do. But you gotta make your own kind of music, sing your own special song. Make your own kind of music, even if nobody else sings along. So if you
on your underarms a whole new way. It's moisture activated. Your perspiration makes it work. Every time you perspire, it releases just the amount of deodorant protection you need. And because it's moisture activated, you can also use it on any part of your body where perspiration odor is a problem.
Body of the underarm spray for any part of anybody.
Well, sir, you're not going to see any part of the body of Miss Nude American. Another thing you can't see is Naked City, Indiana, where the contest took place today to name Miss and Mr. Nude America. So much for the bare facts. On our monitor open line right now is Miss Nude America, Judy Day from West Allis, Wisconsin. And by the way, she's dressed just as she was for the contest, which is to say she's undressed. I understand, though, Judy, that you're allowed to wear shoes if you wish. Why is that?
Well, probably because the sundial becomes very hot and it burns your feet.
Are you wearing shoes right now?
Not right now, no. I took them off.
Just to feel completely at ease.
Right. I have a banner on and a crown, and that's about it.
I must say, you look marvelous.
Thank you.
Naked City, Judy, they tell me, is the world's largest nudist colony. Were outsiders allowed to enter to see the contest?
Yes, they were.
Were they clothed?
Some were and some weren't.
I mean, you could have gone in clothed. Forgive me, I missed that.
The less inhibited were not clothed.
How many people were there?
Oh, I would say there were about 10,000 people.
10,000 people?
Right.
How many of them were clothed?
Oh, probably half of them were clothed.
Were there any celebrities there?
Lots of celebrities.
Who?
Bobby Walstead from
yeah.
the Chicago Bears.
Uh-huh.
Robert Horton, the actor.
I'm listening.
Mussolini's granddaughter.
Were all of them dressed?
The judges were dressed, yes.
Ah. Judy, why did you enter the contest?
Well, I was the first runner-up in the Miss Nude World Contest. And that was due to my agent. He talked me into entering. And then my husband decided that because I was the first runner-up that I should enter the Miss Nude America pageant.
How can you be a Miss Nude America and be married?
Well, you don't have to be single to be in the contest.
I see. By the way, what did you win?
I won $1,000 and lots of publicity, which is great because I'm an exotic dancer, and hopefully a lot of new friends.
Judy, I've just closed my eyes to capture these statistics as vividly in my mind's eye as I can. Would you describe yourself, please?
I'm 5'7". I'm 135. My measurements are 39, 24, 37. I've got brown hair, hazel eyes, olive complexion. That's about it.
What do you mean, that's about it? That's plenty. Were you picked solely on the basis of beauty, or did you have to perform or anything?
No performance. It was just the naked body is what they judged on.
How many contestants?
Approximately 35.
35. Was it a close contest?
Fairly, yes. There were a lot of lovely, lovely girls.
Judy, one final question. We had hoped to talk to Mr. Nude America. Who is he and what happened to him?
His name is Mike Reese, and he's somewhere out in the 300 acres here. We have no idea where he is right now. He's probably out soaking up a little sun.
Thank you very much, Judy Day.
Welcome. Thank you so much.
Miss Nude America, the pleasure's been ours.
Thank you.
I just didn't want you to confuse him with any other Tchaikovsky. The real name of the song is Tchaikovsky 73, and it was by Roger Williams. Well, that's the half hour, folks. I'll be here on monitor well into the night. Hope you'll stay. I'm Bill Mazur.
Can't afford college, you'll never get a good job.
Wrong. Today, there is a crying need for technicians, and you don't need 4 years of college to become a well-paid technician. All you need is a year or two of technical training. For information, write Careers, Washington, D.C. That's Careers, Washington, D.C.
The monitor sound.
I'm sure you've noticed that. Hello again, everybody. Bill Mazur here with a Saturday night sound of monitor. In a few minutes, and for most of this half hour, my guest will be a man who stands tall, who carries himself with pride, and who is a great and dazzling performer on the football field. Add to that the fact that he's become a movie star, and you've got the picture, right? I'm talking about Jim Brown, and Jim has a new picture out, which he'll tell us about. Big Jim, you don't mess around with him. Nor do you with a fella Jim Croce is talking about in this song.
Uptown got its hustlers. The Bowery got its bums. 42nd Street got Big Jim. A walker, he a bull-shooting son of a gun. Yeah, he big and dumb as a man can come. But he's stronger than a country horse. And when the bad folks all get together at night, you know they all call Big Jim Ball just because. And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit your dough mills around with Jim. I don't do that. Well, out of South Alabama come a country boy, sitting looking for a man named Jim. I am a pool shooting boy, my name is Willie McCoy, but down at home they call me Slim. Hey, I'm looking for the king of 42nd Street. He drive on a drop top Cadillac. Last week he took all my money, and it may sound funny, but I come to get my money back. And everybody say Jack. Got a two-piece custom-made for you. Hey, you don't tug on Superman's cape. You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull the mask off that old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Slim.
Jim Brown, football's greatest running back, is now off and running on his 13th movie, a new one called Slaughter. Jim, when you quit football for the movies, you said you had no regrets. You still feel that way right now?
Very definitely, Bill. Had a wonderful time playing football, you know, 9 great years with the Cleveland Browns. But I like making movies now. And, you know, I'm older, and it's not as tough.
You may be older chronologically, but like Cleopatra, time has not withered you, nor custom staled your variety. Man, you look in great shape.
Well, thank you very much. I play a lot of tennis now, Bill, and I play a lot of basketball on the coast.
Jim Brown, tennis player. I know you're the greatest lacrosse player maybe that ever lived. How good a tennis player are you?
Well, I'm not very good, Bill, you know, from the standpoint of playing technical tennis. But within 2 years, I play a pretty good unorthodox game, you know.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't have the strokes and the form, but I do a lot of running around and run around my backhand, and I'm a good player to play with because I return a lot of shots, you know.
You're a retriever.
And good players like to play guys that return a lot of shots.
Jim, I know that the pressure of being the greatest running back in football was an enormous one. What about the pressure of being a movie star?
Well, actually, you know, I've lived with pressure all my life, Bill, you know, because I've always been in sports, and I've always been in the limelight, so to speak. The movie industry is just an extension of that. Acting, of course, I have not had the training that I had in sports, because I grew up with sports. So it is more difficult from that standpoint, but I try to pick roles that fit me, so that I can be more natural rather than picking roles that I could not be natural with and I'd have to use, say, all technique.
Well, now, Slaughter's the title of your new film because the central character is named Slaughter. Who is Slaughter?
Well, Slaughter is a young man who unfortunately had a father who was in the numbers racket and who learned too much about the computer system that the mafia had in Mexico and was killed. And Slaughter goes to Mexico to get his killer, the killers of his father, and gets involved with the CIA, basically, and the mafia. But he comes out all right.
That's it?
Oh, yes. A lot of action, a lot of adventure, and some very sensitive moments with Stella Stevens.
You are Slaughter.
I am Slaughter.
Boy, I saw you play football many times, and you really were. You were talking about picking your own roles. You really haven't had to worry about being typecast, but
Is there anything about Hollywood that's ever made you want to quit the movies?
Well, I've been very fortunate, Bill, because I met a lot of the fine people early in my career, you know, like Bob Aldrich and Kenny Hyman, Lee Marvin, John Cassavetes, people like this. Normally you wouldn't get that opportunity, but because I was a football player, I did get that opportunity. But I do feel that the movie industry, unlike sports, presents a problem because it's an industry that, you know, you can't go 80 yards and know it's 80 yards. You do a film, a year later it comes out, the critics say it's bad, the public go and see it, so it makes money, but it's bad, you know, panned by the critics. Maybe you make a film, the critics like it, the public don't like it. You never know. I think actors are very insecure because there's nothing definite that they can go by. It's all a matter of an individual's judgment. Wherein in sports, if you win the ball game, if you score six, if you catch a pass, that is a statistic that cannot be challenged. And so it's difficult from that standpoint. It didn't want to make me quit, but it is not the same kind of secure profession that I say sports is.
You know, most great writers that I've talked to, and I think I've mentioned this before on Monitor, always tell me, when I ask them, who do you write for, they say they write for themselves. Now, when you act, do you act for yourself or do you act commercially?
No, well, basically, what I did when I went into acting, I wanted to do a number for minorities. I wanted to play the kind of a guy that they had not seen on the screen, a black man that could do everything that a white man had done. And so, in a way, that is out of the context of acting in a sense, you know. In other words, if it was just totally the art, I wouldn't care about anybody. But there's certain things that I just don't want to do because right now I don't think we've had enough of the good things on the screen to go to some of the more, you might say, docile type. In other words, I don't want to play a slave right now. Not because the challenge wouldn't be great on an artistic level, but because I feel that black audiences around the country need to see certain things that are more uplifting. But at some point, I think that will equalize itself and we'll be able to play anything and not have to worry about how it affects the general public.
You're probably wondering why I'm smiling. I gotta tell you, it was a big shock to me in The Dirty Dozen when you died. Even my son said to me, he can't be dead, it's Jimmy Brown. Get up, Jimmy. Run some more.
Yeah, well, I think I was very fortunate that I was killed because a lot of people like the character.
Mm-hmm.
And they liked Franklin, and they pull for him. And in any movie, when the general public pulls for you, it allows you to come back and make other films. And I think that maybe if he didn't die, the impression he made wouldn't have been as great. So in a way, it was fortunate that he did die. But that wasn't done out of any reason other than the fact that it called for it in the script.
Jim, I'd like to pause here for just a moment. We'll continue with our conversation. Just want to remind our friends that you're on the Monitor Beacon. guest on Monitor is Jim Brown. Jim, you're the president and founder of the Black Economic Union, which was started to provide financing to blacks and other minorities who want to go into business. How does the program work? Give us an example.
Basically, what we do is that we try to inform the black public about economic development of black people. We try to help them acquire capital and technical knowledge to enable them to go into business, because we believe that the true road to equality in this country is economic development. And in order to basically be a good businessman, you have to be capitalized properly, and you have to have the technical knowledge yourself, or either be able to acquire the technical knowledge. So we try to turn them on to banks, investment companies for the capital.
That's where you get your support.
That's right. And also into individuals or companies that can act as consultants who have that technical knowledge.
You know, it's strange. You mentioned before about in the movie Slaughter, which is your 13th movie that you play the lead in, and you're so very enthused about, that the mafia uses a computerized sort of thing. And I understand you've just recently launched a computer training program.
Yes, that's very true.
Not because of the movie.
No, not because of the movie, but I think both programs point out that computers are the thing of the future. People learn faster by computers. Consequently, the Black Economic Union have joined in conjunction with the Board of Education in Los Angeles and Stanford University in putting a pilot program, which is a computer-assisted education program in the San Fernando Valley, which includes poor whites, blacks, and Mexican Americans. This computer system will be set up to teach those people who have dropped out of school, to allow them to get their high school diplomas. Now, the Board of Education will award normal high school diplomas to those pupils that pass the GED test, which will be the first time that's happened in history. And we are also concentrating on returning veterans. And Stanford University have done research, and they have found that in the area of compensatory education, computers seem to be the most effective way in increasing learning by about 30% to 40%.
Gee, that's interesting.
That's a fantastic program.
Really, well, you know, having kids of my own who are in school, that makes me immediately think of something that would help them, because you're always looking for
new ways.
Yeah.
The important thing about it is, though, is that with computers, you don't have the social problem. And also, with computers, you can go at your own speed, and it takes less time. For example, a kid can go to school with a computer for an hour and a half a day and get more than he could in a total day with just a normal teacher.
I'll be darned. Do you encourage young minority groups to achieve within the system or to try to change the system?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both, you know, that happens in all of us who are fairly intelligent. You know, we try to change aspects of the system, maybe through the system, you see. But the system definitely is not perfect. There are things, the one thing that I try to get over is that most of us like a lot of things about the system. We like the good things about the system, and we take that for granted. And then the bad things, we overemphasize and give as our excuse for any kind of action. I believe in a positive kind of approach rather than a negative approach. In other words, that's why I believe in economic development. I believe you can whip a man to death through developing industry and developing political power, you know, economic power and political power. So I think that, you know, I would encourage an individual to try to change those things about the system that he disliked, but yet understand that those things, there are things in the system that he does like and that he has to deal with in that system also.
When you give up being a movie star, what are you going to do?
Well, see, being a movie star is really not my life. You know, I work with the Black Economic Union, and it's like that is where my, you know, number one interest is. It's like the development of people, you know. When I was helped through Syracuse University by some very fine people out in Manhasset, Long Island, I didn't know how to repay them. But then when I got in a position to do the same type of thing, that's what I found my greatest pleasure in doing, you know, helping kids into college, pointing the way to a certain kind of development, assisting with my monies and with my time in meaningful programs.
Politics?
No, I don't want to be in politics myself. I would like to be an individual who helps, you know, or give some help to other people that want to go into politics, you know. Because I think now black people are off the streets, you know. I don't think that our non-elective leaders are going to be too impressive anymore. So I think we're going to have elected leaders, which I think is the way it should be, and I think we're going to have to become more sophisticated in our political approach.
Is there anything about pro football that you'd like to see changed?
Yes. I'd like to see the Players Association changed.
How?
Well, I would like to see an outside union represent the players.
Rather than?
Rather than players that are playing representing themselves, basically. I don't think active players can represent themselves. There are too many contradictions. There are too many things to consider.
Other than the structure of it from a business point of view, is there anything about the game you'd like to see changed?
Oh, you mean the game itself? Not really. I think that the game itself, as it is right now, is pretty exciting. You know, I mean, I'd like to see 10 downs, you know, the forward pass outlawed or something like that. But I think it's a very exciting game right now. I know I read the other day Johnny Unitas felt that the zone defense should be outlawed.
Sounds like basketball, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah. But recognizing that Johnny is a quarterback that, you know, maybe having arm trouble now, I could understand why he might come out with an article like that. But I think the defense deserves as much chance as the offense. Remember when Sam Huff was a great defensive player? Became the first defensive celebrity. And I think that helped the game because now both offensive players and defensive players are celebrities.
Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoyed it. Jim Brown, greatest running back of all time. I don't think there are many people who'd argue that, or if they would, you know, it'd be the kind of argument that'd be worth having. Jim's newest picture, his 13th, is called Slaughter. Don't play the field, baby. Run to me. This by the Bee Gees.
If ever you got rain in your heart, someone has hurt you and torn you apart. Am I unwise to open up your eyes to love me and let it be like they said it would be? Me loving you, girl, and you loving me. Am I unwise?
Pretty. That by the Bee Gees. This is by Henry Mancini with a trumpet of Doc Severinsen. We've Only Just Begun. It's a song you hear at weddings a lot these days. By Doc Severinsen with Henry Mancini. Stay with us, good friends. There's a lot more of Monitor to come, and I'd like to share it with you. My name is Bill Mazur.
World news and late information, next on this Monitor station. World news and late information.
When your baby's sick, you take his temperature and call the doctor, right? Well, unfortunately, not everyone can. In many areas throughout the world, there are no doctors to call. But there is hope. Project Hope. It began with a ship, the SS Hope, a floating hospital which has traveled the world over. It's staffed with doctors, nurses, and technologists who not only treat patients, but train medical personnel in the developing countries they visit. The Hope mission lasts 10 months. But when the ship departs, medical teams remain behind to continue the teaching programs. This gives others an opportunity to learn, and they learn in their own environment, working with their own people. Project Hope also has medical training programs here in the United States for American Indians and Mexican Americans. Help, hope, help others. Send a contribution to Project Hope, Room A, Washington, D.C. This is WNBC-FM 97.1 in New York.